And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think that the big news this last week was Biden's address to the Congress. It wasn't the State of the Union. It was a state of aspirations. And the theme was jobs. Everything he talked about, he tied to jobs. He said, this is going to produce jobs, whether it was fighting the virus or whatever it was.
Climate change.
Climate change, jobs. And I thought that was very interesting, especially since today that we're talking on Saturday, May Day, used to be the workers' holiday. Of course, if there's no jobs, there's very few workers. But in any case, what did you make of Biden's address?
Well, yeah, that was certainly the theme. It was I saw somewhere that he used the word jobs 44 times. And it was interesting that when I turned the TV on this weekend, first thing I saw was a commercial. And they showed part of a Biden speech. This was not the presidential speech. This was a previous speech they had given. And but it was using the same themes and some of the same wording. And superimposed on Biden was this huge word, jobs. I mean, it filled the whole screen up. This is the Biden agenda, and what he is doing is playing to what he believes is where the American people are, and on a subject that the Republicans really have no answer to, or can't attack him on. How can he say, well, we're opposed to him creating jobs? So. He's been very disciplined about this, and he's been going after it, and he's been going around the country. For instance, he followed up on his speech by coming to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where Amtrak was, and he talked about how improving the infrastructure. Remember, that was the other big bill that he was working at. Donald Trump talked about Infrastructure Week for 4 years and never produced a single thing. It was all rhetoric. It was all for show. But Biden is saying, these are my concrete policies. And he mentioned, for instance, he said, improving Amtrak and our trains, our infrastructure, would be beneficial. He said, I want to see trains running from New York to Allentown and to Scranton. That's been a big thing for Matt Cartwright ever since he's been elected to Congress. Bob Casey has promoted that. And, that's how they're viewing everything, to create American jobs. And the interesting part is we lost so many jobs.
The pandemic lost us 20 million jobs, right?
In a very short period of time.
Yeah, within a year.
But now what we're seeing is the fact that employers, as America is going back, as we're getting vaccinated, and we're opening up, and in places where the Republicans are, they're opening up without vaccination. That's had its own consequences. But people can't get people to work. There aren't enough people to fill the jobs for some reason out there, and even we're seeing higher wages being offered and things like that. I mean, these are not necessarily minimum wage jobs. Although Biden has proposed going to $15 an hour, and don't forget he's taken federal contracts. He signed an executive order that they must pay at least $15 an hour. But the fact is, for instance, there's a restaurant just down the street from my office that a couple of Mondays ago closed. And they had a sign in the window, is we can't get help. And the main help they couldn't get were cooks and chefs. The cooks and the chefs are not minimum wage jobs in the restaurant. The way the waitresses were, but not the cooks. They're the people that the restaurants run around. And all over. We're seeing that. We're reading about shortages of help and labor. So I think, you know, Biden is on the right track.
Why do you think there are shortages of labor? The Republicans think that there are shortages of labor because workers are lazy. That's why they don't think there should be food stamps. That's why they don't want to expand unemployment insurance. Because people won't have an incentive to work, they say.
Well, there's a couple of things. One is that, particularly since the schools weren't open, people had to stay home to take care of their kids. And some people have decided that they only want jobs where they can stay at home, that they prefer doing that. Now, of course, part of the Biden package was to increase daycare and to increase preschool, which would allow families to have whoever was staying home get out and join the workforce. I think that that's a big factor.
I think that's completely right. If you don't have adequate child care facilities, or if child care facilities are priced out of sight, somebody can't go to work in the family. And if you have a situation where you have to have two breadwinners in the family, and you do in this country, and you don't have child care facilities that they can afford, the jobs will not be taken because there's nobody to take them. Unless you kill the kids, you got to watch and take care of the kids.
Yeah, you got to. You still see people on television, on Zoom calls, they're talking, and all of a sudden the kids appear in the background.
Yeah.
If it isn't the kids, it's the dogs. But mostly it's the kids still doing things. So that's a big factor. And, of course, one of the fights is over the definition of infrastructure, where the Republicans continue to believe it's the old way. It's roads and bridges and not much else. And the Democrats are trying to expand the idea and saying, no, it's not just roads and bridges, by the way, but it's also the railroads, as Biden said, and it's the internet, and it's child care for that, and it's plumbing. It's putting pipes into buildings so people can drink the water. That's a major problem across the country. And so we're getting that. There was a proposal this week, a counter-proposal, finally, from the Republicans that was only about a third of what Biden had proposed. And I heard a White House spokesperson say that unless they could, you know, they could get to starting at least halfway there, there wasn't much to talk about because a third wasn't going to do it. This was one of the either lessons or factors that they talked about from when Barack Obama took over during the Great Recession, that his infrastructure package or his stimulus package wasn't nearly enough. And the idea was that you needed to go big, not small. And we've kind of seen the effects of going big. We've put several different layers now of checks out there into the American economy, and we're seeing a lot of buying. The demand has picked up. Remember, this is a demand-driven economy, not a supply-side economy. Biden said that in his speech, by the way. He said trickle-down economics don't work. We know that. And so we're seeing a huge increase in demand in certain things. You go to, you know, cars. They don't have enough cars to sell. Part of that is that there's a problem with the chip manufacturing, the new cars, but even used cars, they can't get enough cars to sell.
If there's no new cars, people don't turn in their old cars. If they don't turn in their old cars, there aren't any used cars to buy.
We're seeing it in other areas, homes. People. The banks can't keep up with, and if you look at the transactions in the paper of purchases of homes, banks can't keep up with the demand for home loans and for home improvement loans. the home improvement stores, the Home Depots and the Lowe's, would have, you know, they did well during the pandemic because people stayed home and worked on their own houses, but they've really taken off now with people wanting to either buy new homes or improve what they have. There's a different feeling in the air. And of course, the numbers came out this week that the economy grew 6.4% in the first quarter.
No, Goldman it didn't Sachs, grow 6.4%. It grew at the annual rate of
6.4%. Yeah. Right, the rate of. Goldman Sachs is predicting 7%. Remember, Donald Trump made up his numbers. Oh, we're going to grow 4, 5, 6. You know,
well, he talked about 4%. He thought 4% would be great.
Right, and you know, we're way above that right now. We're far above that. You don't hear Donald Trump talking about his numbers anymore. Those numbers, of course, he didn't do anything to really make those numbers come true. All the Republicans did was say no to spending.
But, you know, you talk about the economy recovering, but there's really two ways of looking at the economy. In point of fact, the profitability of the economy was very strong under Trump. All-time record profits. There was great unemployment. The economy for working people and middle-class people was terrible. The economy for the people who owned the main elements of the economy, the big factories, the big banks, the hedge funds, their profitability was sky high. It was terrific. That's why the Republicans really don't care to pass any of these stimulus bills. Their people are doing great. Their income is fabulous. They don't really require that there should be a lot more workers employed in America or that they should be able to buy things made in America, because that's not how the economy is really organized. The economy is, American economy, from the viewpoint of profitability, is based on low-wage labor elsewhere. China, for example, Bangladesh, India, that's Vietnam.
Well, but there was also another element of that, was the investor class, which
is doing great.
Which people didn't have to employ anybody. You sat at a computer, or you gave your money to a hedge fund, and they made money. And the adjunct to that was the lower tax rate.
Right.
That's been the whole thrust of the Republican Party, is reduce taxes, particularly on the wealthy.
That's right, right. And reducing taxes on those people doesn't stimulate the part of the economy that produces things, because
right,
they don't buy things any more than they've already bought. They've already got all the money they need to buy things. And in fact, the tax cut was shown to have benefited 80% of it, I think, benefited the top 5% of the population. And 3/4 of that went to the top 0.1%. Those people can't spend any more than they're spending now. Tax cuts don't stimulate the economy. It just makes rich people much more rich.
Right. Right. But the Republicans are going to fight tooth and nail. The thing is that the Republicans in Congress, the Congressional Republican Party, is solidly detached from the people that they represent.
No, they're not. No.
What I'm talking about, not.
They're detached not from the people they claim to represent.
That's correct. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
The people in their districts, but not the people who give them the money.
Exactly. They do a good job representing the people who give them the money, and the people and the class interests, the corporate interests, and the financial interests that run this country. They support them. They make sure the government works for them. They're not against big government when big government is supposed to aid the hedge funds, the banks, the investors. They're all for that. They have a foreign policy that works for them, a domestic policy that works for them. They're fine with that. And that government is as big as it needs to be, right?
Yeah. Well, you saw them, I want to touch on that in a second, but you saw them sitting on their hands when Joe Biden said, our proposal will reduce childhood poverty by half. You know? And
so what? What do they care? I think that's where Ted Cruz was sleeping.
That was where Ted Cruz was sleeping.
Yeah, he said he fell asleep because it was boring. Reducing child poverty is boring to Ted Cruz.
Yeah, as if there's no childhood poverty in the state of Texas.
Well, not the parts of Texas he cares about.
Yeah, well, he doesn't even care about Texas. He cares about the Mexican Riviera.
That's right.
But, you know, you mentioned something about the way people look at government. And we had, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's America that you grew up under, that I grew up under, and the Great Society, wherein they reimagined government and said government can do a lot for the people. And then the Republicans spent 50 years trying to destroy that. And because they don't want to do things for the people, they want to do it for just the top part of the people, right, the top echelon. And then came Ronald Reagan, and he articulated it very succinctly, and he said, government is the problem. And they cut wherever they could.
And government policies. Was the problem for the Reagan types, because the government was misdirecting its efforts at working people,
right,
instead of directing its efforts solely to the interests of the investor class.
Right. And actually, in order to get elected, the Democrats, to get back in power, you had to have, they brought in a Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton said the era of big government is over. But it really wasn't. I mean, he did certain expansions, and he...
what he really meant was the era of big government on behalf of the working people is over. And he produced the welfare reform bill, so-called reform bill, which was disastrous for poor people. And therefore, in the end, disastrous for all working people.
Well, if you listen to Clinton's, he said he created more jobs than anybody. But that's...
those were low-wage jobs.
Yeah. The idea, though, of whether government can help or government could hurt has changed again. And there was a survey out this week that did some comparison. Back in 2010, which is sort of the apex of the craziness that we've had, the Tea Party era, and the things that followed from that, 61% of the people thought that the government did too much.
These were the people who went to meetings with their congressmen and got up and said, get the government out of my Medicare.
Right.
And thought that they were actually saying something sensible instead of repeating gibberish that had been, you know, brainwashed into their brains, not realizing that Medicare was a government program and that was keeping them alive.
Yeah. Medicare, Medicaid, and that it was actually helping them. You know,
it's what they depended on. Old age before Social Security was a synonym for poverty leading to early death. Social Security brought old people in America, all old people in America, out of the syndrome of you get old, you die because you're poor.
Right. And, you know, the life expectancy was lower. The fact is that old people were not independent. You lived in three-generation houses.
Yep.
Which also stunted the growth of the middle class, because they had to not only care for their children, they had to care for their elderly. And then, of course, Medicare came along, and that increased the life expectancy tremendously.
People don't realize that life expectancy for American people in the turn of the 20th century was 44 years.
Yeah, it was in the 40s.
In the 40s. And it went to 77 years by the 1970s.
Yep.
And all it's because of government programs.
Right. And it's actually declined over the last several years.
Right.
But the fact is that now, when that survey was retaken about whether government did too much, things have flipped. And now 54% of the people think the government is doing too little. In the face of all of these government stimulus programs, they still want more. And the great fear of the Republican Party is that once people see a benefit coming from government, they're going to want to keep it.
The problem with American politics has always been the same, and that is that the Congress, the political powers, the state legislatures, all of them have always been dominated by business and investor interests and have almost never had any kind of adequate representation from politicians who actually represent working people's interests. There's a famous story about FDR. He met with a delegation led by Sidney Hillman, who was one of the top labor leaders in the country at this time. And they were discussing social welfare legislation that had to be done. And they came to an agreement. It was a long meeting, and they came to an agreement. And Roosevelt turned to Sidney Hillman and said, "Sidney, all right, you've convinced me. Now go out and force me to do it." And that's the point. You got to have organizing at the grassroots. You don't have unions, you don't get the legislation that working people need.
Well, that was another part of Biden's speech, is that he came out forcefully, and he said it before, that unions built the middle class.
Yeah, because the political system on its own, without the pressure from the grassroots, is really incapable of producing things that the working people need. It never does it. But if the working people are organized and the politicians feel, well, they're going to lose their jobs, then you have a glimmer of a hope that you might get some legislation passed and enacted and enforced that will benefit people, working people. Otherwise, it doesn't happen no matter what the politician says, because the president and the Speaker of the House and the majority leader of the Senate don't have the ability on their own to do these things. They just don't have it. And people who don't realize how the American political system works are fooling themselves. They're looking for things to happen that can no more happen than, you know, can have a snowball in hell.
Well, that's and we're seeing where we're getting now into the issue in Congress about the filibuster, wherein anything except that for reconciliation can't get through the Congress as long as there's a filibuster. And there's a small group of Democrats that are unwilling to do anything about that.
By the way, that happened in Roosevelt's day. In that case, it was a different situation. In that case, you had the Southern Democrats who refused to do anything if there was the possibility that black people would be benefited. And so Roosevelt had to, in order to get the social welfare legislation for white people, had to make sure that it didn't go to black people. And that's what he did do. All these wonderful programs we're talking about, when they were conceived, had as their intended beneficiary white people, not black people, not immigrants from colored countries. That's the fact.
These countries that Donald Trump talked about, S-hole countries.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
You know, we talk about immigrants. There was something else that happened this week, is we got the rough draft of the U.S. Census. And we found out that the United States is still growing, unlike China, by the way. Chinese census showed that China's actually shrinking in size. But the United States is growing, but at a much slower rate than it has for decades. And the reason for that is that the birth rates are low, and we're not replenishing the country through immigration.
Shift in population. People are moving from some states and moving into other states. In effect, America is being overrun by Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, we found out for the first time California is going to lose a congressional seat. That they didn't, the outflowing did not keep pace with the inflow. Texas got two seats. Florida got a seat. New York lost a seat by 89 people. Whether New York or Minnesota would keep a seat came down to 89 people. And that, of course, is probably just a rounding error for the problems that the census had in collecting data and some of the deliberative.
Didn't everybody agree that the Hispanic population was grossly undercounted?
Sure. That probably also hurt Texas. Yeah. And that they could have gotten more. There were a couple of states that were blue states, like Oregon and Colorado, that increased. Pennsylvania is going to lose a seat, even though its population grew. It's just so much slower. Ohio and West Virginia, now pretty solidly red states, they're going to lose seats.
So what is the overall, as it stands, doesn't it mean that based on the census, the reapportionment will give GOP-controlled areas 3 more electoral votes than they have now?
Well, that's what they're saying, that they'll get 3 more. But a lot of it depends on how certain states act. Like Pennsylvania, we're going to lose a seat, but we're going to lose a probably a Republican seat. Same thing in New York. It doesn't affect the number, the overall number. But you have
to see. Yeah, we'll lose an electoral vote.
We'll lose an electoral vote. But what happens in North Carolina? They picked up a seat, but as North Carolina, if it votes Democratic, you're down to 2. Texas, they've been talking about turning blue in 2024 for a long time. We'll have to see what happens in Texas. Colorado and Oregon, they picked up seats. So we'll have to see. The Democrats certainly have to do a better job in Florida than what they've been doing. But, you know, the thing that's going to hurt most is the Democrats for the second census year in a row, 2010, which was the Tea Party year, and now 2020, failed in state elections, state legislatures, to gain control. And that's where it's going to hurt, because the state legislatures in many states control the congressional reapportionment, but they also control the state alignment for districts.
Well, let's face it, if the Democrats or progressive forces generally don't figure out a way to make inroads in the rural areas, they're never going to succeed. They don't have to capture the majority in the rural areas. They just have to do better. They just have to do better than 30%. They got to get to 40%, 45%. And that would end Republican domination in many, many state legislatures, including the Pennsylvania state legislature.
Well, you live in that rural area.
I do.
What are their chances?
If you look at it over a 10-year period, the chances are great. If you look at it, and every time you look at it, you're looking at it, and your horizon is the next election, you're always going to lose. You got to have, as you point out, a long-term strategy. The people they talk about and praise now are people like Stacey Abrams in Georgia. She worked at that thing for 15 years, and the results are first now beginning to be shown. That's what you got to do. You got to have a plan, a long-range plan, a clever plan, takes into account local characteristics, adequately funded, and you just keep at it. So far, the Democrats don't fund these things, and they take the attitude that every stock market guy takes. I need results in this quarter. It can't happen that way. It doesn't happen that way.
You can't be day traders.
No, you can't be day traders.
You have to
take the Warren Buffett approach.
Yep. Think long term.
Yep.
Well,
we got to think short term because we're coming to the end of the time period.
Okay.
What do we got coming up next week?
Well, this is Law Week. We'll see what's happening. And we're 2 weeks short of a primary election in Pennsylvania.
Let's talk about that next week. See you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.